Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast with Phil Pringle. Phil is the founder and senior leader of C3 Church Global, a family of over 500 churches around the world. We're passionate about bringing you fresh, inspiring devotionals to fuel your day and insightful conversations on all things church and leadership. And it all starts right now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our C3 Church Global podcast. This is such a great event this week because we've got Pastor Jeff and Sonny Kane.
Hello.
Hey.
From C3 Atlanta. And we're going to have a little conversation here about leadership, pastoring, and traveling through difficult situations. Welcome, Jeff.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's a great thing for me to have you both on this podcast. Sonny?
We love being here. Thanks for having us. It's going to be great.
Sonny, you'd be one of the best preachers in our movement, I think.
Absolutely.
Wow, thanks. That's really nice of you.
I really like listening to you when you bring in the word. And of course, Jeff, you are also, you're a good preacher.
Almost close second.
No, yeah. Great leadership. And you guys, what's it like running this great church here in Atlanta? I'm always impressed when I come here, seeing right from the car park experience, seeing the sign on the corner, the people greeting at the door, the coffee smells in the lobby, the music playing, and then we do two services. And there's not one part of it that I don't enjoy. I just think you've done such a great job in creating this culture. Tell us a bit about how you did that.
Well, I think we walked into a culture of hospitality to begin with. I think Pastor Chris, your wife, is certainly the leader of that movement.
Right.
And I think taking that in a different context, so coming out of Australia, coming out of a different culture in America, I think we're in the south of America. We're in the most hospitable country region in the world. And so I think we just took that to another level. And our goal is simply to make this feel like home for everybody who walks in the door. And so Sunday and I are both a little bit type A, a little bit OCD. And so we just we grab onto things like that, and we just go through every part of the process, from when someone's driving in to when someone's at the front doors, and we examine those. And every week we have breakdowns on those, and we say, what is it we could do to be better?
Yeah.
Not because we want to be good, but because we want people to come in and have a great experience. And so I think it's worked well for us.
It's a big deal, right? Hospitality, I think we underestimate it to our own detriment. And I think a little key phrase in there that you said is, we want to make it feel like home for people. How do you think that happens, Sonny?
I would say a huge key to our success in doing that is our team. So we've got a team that comes together that has all different skill sets. And as we come together, I think that we use our gifts, and that is what makes people feel welcome. It makes them feel like, you know, they get just a little bit of every different.
What would be one of those things, like me saying, hey, here's a cup of coffee, and just reaching out to people, or taking them out for lunch, taking them home for dinner?
I mean, that's the culture that we have. We always are super friendly to people. We want them to feel known, and we want them to feel needed. We want them to feel relaxed, just like you said, like they've found home. We try to make sure that we take people to meals and invite them into our homes. And
That's a big thing these days, because most people would say, let's just go to a restaurant.
They would, but there's a difference in your home, right?
I think there is.
You invite them into your world, and
exactly.
Then they're a part of what you're doing.
Exactly. You guys took over a very challenging situation a couple times.
Yeah.
Where the former pastor had some challenges, some, you know, difficulties and trials, and it ended up being a need for new leaders, new pastors in each situation. And that was tricky. I mean, how do you... Tell us about that, because in all of our lives, I've been in those situations a few times, and you need to stabilize a very unstable situation. And I've always found that getting the air clean again, you know, like just getting out of all that toxic ambience around the place to actually a place where the place feel like it's smiling.
Yeah.
Like you walk in and the church is smiling again. Tell me how you've done that.
I think communication is really key in two ways. I mean, I think you're dealing with people, And so I just believe that God has the best for people. And so the first thing I've got to do is come with humility going, I don't know how to deal with this. And so the first communication I go to is, you know, I go to God and just and ask him, because without him, I can't do anything. I'm not going to pretend like I've got this strategy that's just going to build this house the way I want it to be built, or recover this house the way I want it to be recovered, or even help people in the way they need to be helped. But, you know, coming out of that idea and then confronting social media, confronting Sunday services, confronting connect groups and things like that every week, I think it's really just being incredibly open in communication with people, because ultimately people want to recover. No one wants to be in crisis. No one healthy wants to be in crisis. And so I think as we come to a fuller communication between two people with the right heart going in, I think oftentimes you end up with a better result than you can imagine. I mean, I really don't think in any of those conversations I had in either one of those two crises, I ended up in a place that was even close to as bad as I thought it would be in my head walking in. You know, it's like you do the Psalm 23 devotionals, and Pastor Phil, when I used to read Psalm 23, it was always like a funeral feel. Mm-hmm. And then I heard you talk about it, and it becomes this incredibly uplifting, incredibly faith-building scripture passage. And I didn't fully understand it until you explained it to me. So that communication from the scripture wasn't penetrating, but when you communicated that more fully, now it makes me come alive. It's the same way with people. You know, absence doesn't make the heart grow fonder in church. Absence breeds contempt. And so just being more proactive in communication, I think we found that people wanted to be stable, people wanted to grow, people wanted to be healthy. And when they saw that that's what we wanted ultimately for them too, it covered up a lot of problems.
So important. I mean, it's just like the first rule of to have some kind of organized, cascading information timeline, so that you tell these people, then you tell these people, then you talk to these people. And if my view of it is that it fulfills what John the Apostle was saying when he says, walk in the light.
Yes.
Because if people are in the dark, they imagine the worst. So when you're not talking and they don't know, they imagine the negative.
Yes.
And so we have to be proactive and initiate communication. Right. Simply so that people stay in the light. They stay bright, positive, life-giving, and warm. And that's just part of any problem-solving situation. I mean, during COVID, I told some guys, you need to lift your communication levels times 10.
Absolutely.
If you were calling a person once a month, you need to talk to them 10 times in the month.
Well, they say the biggest deception in communication is that it's happened.
Oh, that's
you,
good.
You think it's happened and it didn't actually happen. You think you communicated and either it didn't hit or didn't land, or you never really communicated it well in the first place. And scripture says, you know, if the light you think you have is actually darkness, how deep does that darkness go? I think that's a perfect description of most of our communications.
Right.
We think we've done everything we need to do, when in reality, we haven't even come close to communicating what we're trying to convey.
Most women think that men like me are not great communicators in marriage. And I tend to agree.
Right.
When I am concerned or anxious or troubled, I definitely retreat into the back of the cave. And to come out can actually be painful. It can be disruptive. But ladies love to just let it out. Talk it out.
They love to talk about their feelings.
So do you and Jeff, do you find that with Jeff, or do you talk okay?
I think that over the years, it took a little bit, but over the years, Jeff has realized how much I need words. So sometimes we laugh because he'll say, I'm out of words for the day. I just need you to know I'm out of words for the day. But when we're trying to communicate about things, he's really good about going over the details because he knows that's what I need. When we first started out, that wasn't the case necessarily, but because we've communicated so much during our marriage, I try to talk less so that it feeds what he needs, and he tries to talk a little bit more. So we get through things a lot better because we know what the other one needs.
It's the essence of any good relationship, healthy communication.
For sure.
I'm a terrible communicator. She's just being really, really kind.
Oh, you're good.
Tell me about that.
I mean, she helps me all the time because I think I'm communicating something, but if I'm in a bad mood or I'm stressed or I'm anxious, I think I retreat into my cave a little bit. I retreat into quiet and solitude, and she can see it on me, so she'll kind of force me to, we've got a couple of, you know, like little signs we give each other to say, hey, it, you know, there's a problem here, so that she can kind of pull the communication out of me. I think most guys tend to be like that.
Yeah.
And it makes it very difficult. I think, what does a good therapist do? Good therapist gets you talking,
right,
and communicating. That's their, right, primary job.
Yeah.
And Sunny's my therapist most of the time because she gets me communicating.
So I listened to a woman recently talking about this.
Okay.
And same difficult, just couldn't get her husband to actually volunteer the information or to speak. She said, so I asked the question that I wanted to know about and then just went quiet, didn't talk. She said, because normally I would ask it again and then try and keep talking and ask a different thing and then keep talking and then say something else and then keep talking and then, and he wouldn't say, and I just didn't know why he wasn't talking to me. But then she said, I only said one thing and then just stopped. And slowly and quietly, he just started to say one thing. And when he saw the road was clear to say another, he said another. And so she found that by restraining her desire to have the talk, by stopping to talk, it gave him space. But it was an awkward silence, she said, for a decent amount of time, and still is awkward. But just learning to not actually try and make the conversation happen by continually talking. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think we get, the guys especially, and Sunny, maybe you've got some insight into this, but the guys especially, I think we're processors a bit. And so it takes us a minute to get what we want to say up out of our belly into our mouth. And then when girls will ask us another question, it's like it resets the clock for us, trying to figure out what we're going to say. So Sunny, I have a joke. She'll ask me a bunch of questions during the day. And I say, for every question you ask me, I have a 30-minute answer, but you only ask me you ask me a question every 2 minutes. So I've got this giant buildup of answers in my gut, and I just get frustrated, so I just stop answering. And that's just that's a communication problem by itself. Just to,
it is working out to be a real therapy session.
That's right. That's right. Thank you, Pastor Bill.
Yeah. What, talk to us about that, Sunny.
Well, I think that, you know, again, it's give and take. So we have to learn that stuff from each other. And if we can't learn from each other in our house to communicate with each other, if men can't come out of their, excuse me, let me just go backward. If women can't allow men to come out of their cave, right? So it's on us first. If we can't sit back for a minute and give them a second and get some really good communication going back and forth and learn to read each other, how in the world are we going to communicate with people in the church? Like, you've got to have what's at home working so that when you go into the church and you're communicating with leaders or you're communicating with your church members or you're communicating with brand new people that are walking through the door, like, we've got to be great communicators. That's key to what we're doing. So, you know, I think we're always trying to work on it. And I can read Jeff. I can read his face. I do have lots of questions all the time, and I try to save them. And then I just rapid fire, and I'll go, that's not the way to do it. I've got to ask some in the morning and some in the afternoon and some at night. And, again, we've just learned it. And everyone's different. That's not how every man works. But, you know, I think us as women, we have to sit back and allow men to be who they're going to be as long as they'll try to come out. I think we're in a good place.
You know, I don't think church members go home with you at night. I mean, I'm stuck with Sunny at
we're
night.
We're kind of hoping
when the communication gets stagnant, I'm still stuck at home. Like, we're still stuck together. Church members just go somewhere else. They go, oh, we can't communicate. They can find somewhere else, especially in the South of America. I mean, there's a church on every corner.
Right.
So if you're managing crisis and you're not communicating effectively, they just might not ever be back again.
Yeah. And the word communication, I think in most people's mind, as soon as they hear that, they're thinking talking, not listening. But communication actually is two-thirds listening and one-third talking.
That's really good. That's true.
Two ears, one mouth.
Yes.
And so double our listening and half our talking, I think, can help people. This is such a good conversation because this is at the root of so many breakdowns.
Yes.
Just people unable to talk, unable to get along with each other. Then, you know, finding a person who's got ears that don't judge you, I think that helps the communication as well. If you feel like this person's once they know this about me, or no matter what I say, they're going to be critical and judgy. And I think churches feel like that a lot.
Absolutely.
It's just the easiest thing in the world to use God to make people feel guilty. Religion has done that for centuries.
It's terrible.
And it is the worst use of religion, of God, to bind people up with guilt and rules they can never keep and lifestyles that are impossible. So to be able to talk and feel like you're not going to get shock and horror and judgment, I think get understanding and acceptance, that really, really helps a lot.
Yeah, I think we have to realize on the other side too, just as, so forget at home for a minute, and if we're talking about church, we have to realize that when people come in, that when they decide to step out into communicating a bit, when they begin to speak to us, they're taking a huge risk. Because anything they've ever heard is judgment. You know, I mean, maybe not everything they've ever heard, but in probably previous churches that they've gone to, or relationships with their teachers or with their coworkers, they get judgment. And so it's a real risk to actually communicate with someone. And I think we've got to realize that on the other side, to go, wow, thank you. Thank you for taking a big risk. And we have to make sure we respond to that well. We can't come at them full guns blazing. Oh my gosh, I'm so, You know, we can't go crazy at them, and we also can't just sit back and be, you know, too calm. I think it's important that we realize the risk people take, and when they take that risk and receive the love of God on the other side, how much better will they begin to communicate? And that's really where they find who God is on the inside of them. As we allow this safe place, they begin communicating, and then they keep coming, and we keep telling them who they are, and then they start believing who they are, and then they begin communicating with other people about who they are. So it's really, to me, it's wrapped up so much. I mean, the whole love of God is wrapped up so much in how we communicate, and like you said, how we sit and listen, because that's a part of communication as well.
And I think all of us actually have a need to unburden our soul. We might know something privately, but actually we need someone else to know.
Right.
And not just God. And I think healing comes.
Yes.
When, I mean, scripture goes, you know, at the nth degree, saying confess your faults one to another that you may be healed. Well, it may not be even in the confessing your faults, but just unburdening something that I have got troubling me, and to find a trusted friend, I think is important. At least one.
Yes.
And when people haven't had that, they get a you know, a confessor, or maybe in the therapy world, a therapist. I think we should also have a friend, a comrade that we can share with, and they're not going to laugh and say, oh, that's nothing, right, or joke it off or minimize it or demonize it, yes, but actually respect it, like you say, Sonny.
I think you can even communicate that when you're talking to someone, especially in a crisis situation. You say, hey, I need to communicate this to you, and I'm speaking to you in this way. Hey, I'm, you know, like you said, you're listening to someone, and that gives them significance and gives them opportunity. But then when you say, hey, let's communicate, and this is what I need you to do, I'm not going to get offended. I'm going to sit here and listen to you. I'm going to take everything you say with a real weight, because you're adding definition to the conversation. You're adding definition to the communication. And I think when you have friendships like that, sometimes you need to say to your friend, hey, I've got something pretty heavy I need to communicate. So don't take this in the same way you would take a casual conversation. This is a pretty serious conversation. Sonny and I will hold hands in our marriage if we're have a real serious conversation. Sometimes we'll hold hands, because when you touch hands, there's a warmth that just kind of melts your anxiety. And I think just communicating the boundaries of the conversation can be a huge win in communication.
That's so good. That is really, really great advice. So you came into these troubled church situations, two of them, where the leaders had now gone and you were taking the new role. And the first thing you do is to create a good communication channel and network so that everybody is aware of what's going on, where you're going forward, and et cetera. What would be another one that helped you stabilize those situations and take them forward? Because both those churches are doing brilliantly.
Well, I think the next step of that is you raising up people that can communicate on your behalf. Because the truth is, not everyone's going to like you. Right. I mean, you may preach on Sunday, but that coffee on Tuesday afternoon, I'm not equipped to have that communication with every single person in my church. I don't have the time for that. I'm also not the best person to do it, because the best person to do it is someone who already has some kind of a existing relationship. That first situation we went into, we didn't know anybody in that church. We walked in and everyone was a stranger. Mm-hmm. So I'm not the best person to have the conversation with someone who's been there for 3 weeks. I'm more equipped to have the conversation with the leader who understands what the situation is and can give me the big issues and the big points, and I can help communicate my heart to them. But I think you're empowering other people to have the same communications, which means, in my mind, it's got to get way more precise, because it's that old Chinese telephone game. You know, I communicate one thing to you, you communicate it to someone else, they communicate it on the line, and by the end, it's nonsensical. Well, if you've got a challenging church situation and you're just relying on, well, I had a conversation with them, and that's all you did, by the time it gets 3 and 4 down, it completely changes the character of the conversation. And so Sunday morning to me is just extraneous. You can communicate some things on Sunday morning, but it's such a broad shotgun blast that you need emails that are written down in really concise ways, not 7-page emails. If you have to scroll more than once up on your phone to read the whole thing, you've gone too long. They concisely communicate what you want people to know, and following up those leadership conversations in that way so that communication can go down through the Perfect. Ranks of the church pretty well.
Yeah. Okay, so Sunny, you know, one thing I've noticed in this church that you're leading and in the other one is the character of the leadership amongst the women leadership, it's as good as any I've ever seen. Mm. And they're just a real reflection of Beautiful. Your input
oh, wow.
and what you're doing. Thanks. What have you done to create such a healthy women leadership in the church?
Well, this one's going to be all about me, to be really honest with you. when I took on this position, I felt confident in who God called me to be. But in filling in these two churches and filling this position, I felt like I had to be what the person was before me, because that was the requirement, right? So during this process, I've had to get really comfortable and confident in who God has called me to be. I don't have to do what the other pastors used to do. I have to do what God's called me to do. I have to step out in my gifts, not in their gifts. And that was a little bit of a journey. I didn't realize it was in front of me. I thought that I knew that. And so the reason that I'm telling you that is because my just honesty in that process, I don't mean that I'm like bearing all to everyone, but my honesty in that process of, you can't try to be someone that you're not trying to be. You have to be your authentic self, I think has allowed other people to take their walls down, other women to take their walls down. And instead of trying to be someone that they see on Instagram or trying to be someone that they see up on stage or trying to be like the worship leader or like their friend, I feel like I have given them permission, because I've lived it out myself and I'm still living it out, that you have to be who you're called to be. And I just really believe that women have taken that on and they're stepping out in the gifts and callings that they have. And that's actually what makes our church fantastic, is that no one's trying to do someone else's job. They're staying in their lane. So.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And, you know, like this last point we'll put on the podcast is the thing that I have seen that limits many churches is the security level of the leaders, of the husband and wife who are leading the team. And what you're talking about right there is getting secure.
Yes.
In who you are.
Right.
Rather than feeling like you're being compared to your predecessor or to anybody else in the world, but saying, this is who I am.
Right.
I'm comfortable with that. If you're not, then, you know, that's something you need to deal with, or else, you know, we're not going to be walking together. And so I think being secure, and I would say that about both you, Jeff, and yourself, you are both really settled in who you are. There's no sense of you being artificial or creating a persona that is something else other than what you are. What you see is what you get. And I love that. Mm. And Jeff, in your world, getting secure, what's that been about for you?
I mean, I think it's exactly what Sonny said, is what's your call in God? And so if I start putting my security, and I certainly did early days, get my security in how many numbers I have on Sunday, how many people I have in seats, of course, I think every pastor is called to grow the kingdom and to get people saved and to be effective ministers. But I believe God's called me to be a pastor of an X number church. And if I do the best I can, if I water and I plant and I care for this thing that God's given me, he'll cause the increase. And so I'm not so focused on the increase as I am on the basics. And the basics are, how am I doing in my relationship with God? Because that ultimately, we can say that's over-spiritualizing it. We can say all these kind of excuses. But the truth is that's the most important thing. And everything else should flow as fruit from that. And if that's not the absolute foundation of what we're going to do, I think we're always going to find ourselves falling short in the insecurity field.
And I think if we're going to get our security out of the results, out of the numbers, we'll always be straining. And that actually works against those numbers being achieved. So if you can get relaxed and just put water around the roots, fertilize it on the soil, just tend to the basics, make sure there's sunshine, which is like worship, the tree will of itself
bear
fruit. Right. Yes.
You don't have to try hard. Anyway, guys, been so good talking with you, and we're so delighted to have you as part of the C3 family, and all that you do for so many people is incredible. God bless you. Thanks for being on.
Thank you. Honored to be a part.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the C3 Church Global Podcast. Let us know what you thought by leaving a review and connect with us on Instagram @C3 Church Global. We hope you'll be back real soon.